the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get it going. This hour of Flames Talk is underway on a Friday, April 4th. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Yeah, it's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's a Friday, and that means it is our absolute pleasure to say hello to our next guest. And in fact, not guest, he is your co-host for the next hour. It's time for Eric Francis Fridays. Eric joining us now from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca on Twitter at Eric Francis. EF, how we doing, pal? Happy Friday.
Fantastic, man. It's melting. We're going to be golfing real soon here. Real soon.
I hear that. I hear that maybe you're close to making that a reality already.
Well, just played 18 holes, yeah, but it was on a sim. That doesn't really count. It's not as fun as being out in the great outdoors. But yeah, Monday. I'm playing Monday, I hope. Tuesday, maybe Wednesday.
It's what I like to hear, man. Well, here's a segue. The Flames are hoping they're not doing the same here very, very soon. And I don't even say that tongue in cheek, EF, because you know this Flames team has not given up any iota of belief here. They're coming off a 4-1 win over Anaheim on Thursday night. Keep themselves in the fight. Yes, they've got an uphill climb. Yes, they have to track down Minnesota. Yes, Minnesota's in the driver's seat, all that type of stuff. But how are we feeling? Like, we see how this team is going about their business. We see how confident this group is in their belief and what they believe they are as a team. Like, how are we feeling about the Flames and this final two-week stretch of the regular season?
Well, it's kind of two separate ways of looking at it. How are they feeling? They're playing their best hockey of the year, which says a lot about how successful this season is, no matter how it ends, to me. You know, they've really – the fact that you can be playing the best hockey of the year right now, not many teams can say that. And they're not kind of daunted by the – by being in the spotlight here, mm-hmm. Pressure's on, but they have not wilted. You know, those are all good signs moving forward as this team continues to build for future years. In terms of can they make the playoffs, separate question. And I'll answer it by saying this. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, the optimists, if you squint really, really hard, you can kind of see, well, if they win that game in hand, I guess tomorrow, you know, you could consider that the game in hand, whatever you want to say. They win that game in hand. Then they're only three back. And then they play Minnesota next Friday at the Dome, and they win that. Then they're only one back. And then we got ourselves a situation. You got to really squint to make both of those things happen to get even close. So, obviously, it's a massive uphill climb. The odds are stacked tremendously, 90% against them making the playoffs. Do I think they're going to make the playoffs? No, I don't. But I give them full marks for the fight they're putting in and the fact that they were giving people their money's worth right until the end here. That's pretty successful season no matter where they finish.
Yeah, and look, I entered this season and I thought they were going to be more competitive than maybe other sources thought they might be. I mean, there was talk about them being 30th or 31st. I thought this group was going to be competitive. I thought this group was going to be in the mix for a good chunk of the season. And then maybe by the time April rolls around, you know, it would be pretty clear that they're out of it. I thought this group was going to be maybe a little bit closer to where Utah is right now, where they're nine back, but they put up a good fight all year long. Well, the Flames are really the last team standing that isn't in the playoffs. I think we can sing the swan song for Vancouver. I think Utah has already done their encore on their swan song. So it's Calgary, and that's it. And so the fact that they are still competitive and still fighting and still in the mix on April 4th with seven games to go. I thought they were going to be better than a lot of people thought, a lot of other people thought, but they've exceeded my expectations. I know they've exceeded your expectations. They've exceeded internal expectations in terms of, you know, the way management and such was looking at the way this team might fare this year. And yeah, I give them a ton of credit that on April 4th, we're still using the P word. We're still talking about the playoffs and we're not getting laughed out of the building. Yes, I'm with you. The uphill climb is steep and you do have to kind of start to twist yourself into knots to see how maybe it becomes a little bit more likely. Fact of the matter is, all Minnesota needs to do is earn 9 points and Calgary can't catch them. And the fact that Calgary has to overtake Minnesota and can't be tied with them makes it that much more difficult because Minnesota pretty much already has the tiebreaker. It's almost set in stone that they've got the first tiebreaker. So, you know, it is a difficult situation and the Flames are behind the eight ball. But I like the fact that I'll throw this at you because going into the Anaheim game on Thursday, I was really interested to hear because the two guys that we spoke to kind of in the scrum setting on Thursday morning after morning skate were Jonathan Huberdeau and Blake Coleman, two veterans, two guys that know the score, two guys that have been there, done that, seen a lot in their careers. And both guys were talking very openly, like, we know the score. We got to win pretty much every game. We got to go 6-2 at worst, maybe even 7-1 if we want to have a shot. And to hear them talking about that and to hear them being very forthright in that and yet still going out and putting an urgent game on the table against Anaheim and really impressing, you know, I came away really impressed with just how realistic their mindset is and yet still how focused they are on getting the job done. So I think they're going to fight right till the very end and until there's no longer any math in their favor. And that to me is something that really impresses me about what they've done this year.
Me too. And, you know, I look at their last 9 games, they've won 6 of them, lost 1 in overtime in Edmonton and then 2 regulation losses. The 2 regulation losses in their last 9, they were victimized tremendously by video replays, 3 in total. And, you know, I think we've, you know, I'm not using it as an excuse because sometimes you win those calls and sometimes you lose them. And I know there are people still in this city who think they got completely jobbed on at least 2 of the 3 of them. And, you know, I think 1 of the 3 for sure they got screwed on. The other 2 flip a coin on any given day on what the situation room is going to decide. But my point is this, they played good enough to win all 9 games. And just, you know, you're not going to win every game just because you played good enough to win. Bounces come into play, mm-hmm. Video replays come into play. You know, all sorts of things can come into play. And then you talk about bad bounces and bad luck. I mean, they go up against a St. Louis team that's won 11 in a row. Like, who in the world thought that was a possibility? And that's kind of unfortunate for this organization, is putting it mildly, that happened. But they've taken all that in stride and still continue to put their best foot forward. And like I say, you know, played well enough to win all 9 games, which is, you know, tough to fathom. But at least they're playing such good hockey. So, there's so much to be impressed by. And, you know, look, we've been in this situation, Pat, for all these years that you and I have both covered the team. Like, you know, more often than not, you get to a point where there's a magic number, and once they start losing that many games, their season's over. But you're right, nobody thought it'd be this late in the season.
Yep.
And give them credit for all the lessons that they're learning while being in this race this late.
Well, let's maybe get into that part of it, because I know that you went on a bit of a rant on the Sportsnet 1 telecast on Thursday as Calgary was in the midst of beating Anaheim by that 4-1 score. And I'll ask you again, and if you want to tee up the rant again, go forward, be my guest rather. If they end up missing, like if they don't pull off the miracle comeback, and if they do end up missing the playoffs this year, is it still a successful season in your eyes? Or is this what, you know, many people will call another failure, because if they miss, they'll be in that quote-unquote mushy middle? How do you feel about that?
Well, listen, when this season started and I thought playoffs were an impossibility, my whole thought was the entire season will be measured on on the steps that are being taken towards rebuilding. You know, it's not measured in points, wins and losses. It'll be measured in growth. You know, growth in the AHL level, growth amongst kids like Parekh in the OHL, all the different prospects they have, but also the team itself. Guys that are on the roster, are they continuing to progress, be better? Is the unit better? By almost any metric, this has been a wildly successful season in my view, and I'm not trying to make apologies or suck up to anybody. I just think, you know, Team Tank, the only downside is that you lose that first-round pick to Montreal, which is, you know, you didn't want to lose the better of the two picks. But at the end of the day, Team Tank is so wrong when they say this is a lost season just because they didn't make the playoffs or they didn't get a top-10 pick. This is a tremendously successful season, in my belief, because of the what they've built in that dressing room. There's a culture that's being built in Calgary right now of guys who want to be here, who are playing selfless hockey, like blocking every shot they can, sometimes with their face. There's guys that have bought in completely to what the coach and the general manager are preaching, what the leadership group is preaching. Like, everybody's on the same page. You tell me the last time you covered a Calgary Flames team where everybody was on the same page. Are they the most talented team? No. Could they do any damage in the playoffs? I doubt it. But that's not how this was supposed to be measured this year. To me, it was all supposed to be measured on growth. And when you just look at the culture alone and how far that's come from a year ago or 2 years ago when everybody hated being here because of the coach and the culture that was being built here, the horrible existence that these players had under that coach, it's night and day. So the growth is tremendous. General manager's done a good job. I don't buy for a second anyone who tells me this wasn't a successful season.
And I would also add to that, in that the biggest reason through 75 games why they are where they are is the play of Dustin Wolf, who is the guy that you're counting on to be your franchise goalie of the future. And by all accounts, like, looks like he could be that franchise goalie the way he's played for the most part this season. They're here thanks in large part to the play of Dustin Wolf. And we all were excited to see what Wolf could be. We were all excited to see if he could take on an NHL workload, but I don't think anybody expected him to be as high-end a goalie as he's been this year. And so now you've got, yeah, you know what? If they do miss, they will get a middling pick. And that will be not as ideal for some as having a high pick. But What's different for me about this season, Francis, and we talked about this before, but what's different for me is that this year, yeah, you know what? There have been plenty of extremely frustrating years where they have been exactly that, a mediocre, middle-of-the-road team that isn't bad enough to get good and isn't good enough to do anything, you know, for real in the playoffs. But this year, if they finish just on the outside looking in, they have exceeded expectations, not fell short of them to get there, and they've been led by a franchise goalie who's 23 and a 20-goal scorer who's 22 and have had some important contributions from a 23, 24-year-old Connor Zary and a 24-year-old Kevin Ball, and with more to come. I think that there are different factors that go into where they are this year than in other years. And that's why I'm with you. I don't see it as a failure if they do end up missing at the end of the day.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly, you know, I agree. And, you know, for those people who say, well, the only reason they're in this is because of the goalie, if you want to spin it on its head and put it that way, well, first of all, goalies are part of a team. They're a big part of it. Like, you can't just say, oh, they're no good, but except for the goalie. The goalie is a product of the general manager deciding to go with the high build and making room for Dustin Wolf to be a guy who can play 40, 50 games. In that, if you don't trade Markstrom, you don't open that door.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, you got some pretty good assets for Markstrom while doing it. And, oh, by the way, when you made some of the other decisions, some forced, some not, and you traded Tyler Toffoli, you ended up getting a third-round pick that turned into Adar Suniev. And I think it's pretty clear to say that there's lots of reasons why people should be really excited about this guy arriving in town this week because of the last couple seasons he's had and because of the size he has and because, oh, he just happens to have the one thing this team needs the most, which is scoring ability. And as a nice accoutrement, size, which is something that this organization is really cognizant of continuing to build in the Western Conference, in the Conference of Giants. So, there's picks coming. We may see Zane Parikh here as early as Monday. We may see, we're going to see these youngsters more and more start popping up on the radar, getting people more and more excited. And just because they weren't top five picks doesn't mean they can't emerge as stars. Because guess what? Mackenzie Weegar's a seventh-round draft pick. Dustin Wolf's a seventh-round draft pick. People probably should be putting a little more faith in the scouting staff and the job they do at picking these guys, because guess what? Some of these youngsters are really starting to turn out. Like Matt Coronato, you're going to tell me he didn't have a productive year? Wasn't a successful year for Matt Coronato? Became a 20-goal scorer. Go through the roster. One guy who didn't have a successful year, but largely because of injuries, Connor Zary. But even Pospisil, who hasn't put up the numbers you'd want, he still had a very successful year because he's been a productive member of their top line and helped enable Nazem Kadri to be the star of this team for the last month and carry it on its back. Mm-hmm. So lots of reason for optimism, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, and the last thing on that front, I mean, Craig Conroy has been saying all along that, like, hey, we're not deviating. And how long have we talked about that? The fact that, yeah, you know what? They are having success and unexpected success this year. But that doesn't mean that they still don't have a plan for continuing to get younger. Francis, I think next year, regardless of where they finish, if they finish in the second wild card spot and in 2 weeks' time we're getting prepared for a Flames-Jet series, or if they finish in ninth and Minnesota is playing Winnipeg for round one, it doesn't change that Craig Conroy is going to continue to try to get this team younger next year, and I think they will be a younger team next year. No question I think they'll be younger. And that process doesn't end just because they've had a little bit more success than people on the outside thought they were going to have this year. Like, this team's big picture and where this team is going is still the number one priority. And so it's not like anything's changed or they've taken their eye off the prize, even though 75 games in, they're still playing for something.
Yep, absolutely. And every move he's made, whenever he makes himself available to the media, he explains exactly how and why this fits into the blueprint.
Yep.
And, that clairvoyance, that direction, I think goes a long way. And, there is an upwards momentum, and nobody could tell me otherwise for this organization in terms of the excitement level because of the new building and the belief that that's actually going to be a recruiting tool to maybe help assist in a small way. I don't buy that anybody would ever sign somewhere just because they've got a shiny new building. I don't agree with that at all, but I think that it's been hurting the team for a long time. Part of the several things on a checklist that a player is not interested in entertaining. Now they've checked that off, and it'll be one of the best buildings in the league, if not the best. And, I just think there's so much momentum in terms of these young guys. People are excited about Suniev. People are excited about Parikh. People are excited about Prestavich. And, go down the list. There's all sorts of guys that, that people are now starting to sink their teeth into and follow these youngsters. Yeah. And in conjunction with a leadership group that's going to be around for a while, that's steering the ship and setting the tone. I just think there's a real nice mixture going on right now. And, I think people are excited about next year, no matter how this year ends. Yep.
And who, this is the other thing that I found very interesting throughout. There's lots of talk about Team Tank and wanting to get a higher draft pick and all those types of things. I mean, have we, I know you have, I know I have, like, have we seen the way Nazem Kadri has played here? Have we seen the way Mackenzie Weegar is laying it all out? Did we watch Blake Coleman on Thursday night against Anaheim? Like, do you think that these guys have really taken pride in, for all three of the guys I just mentioned, and others are in this mix as well, but for Weegar, for for Coleman and for Kadri. Like, for the first times in their careers, they're not bit parts. They're being asked to be driving forces on a team. Like, hey, you are the team. You need, like, Blake Coleman was a bit part of two Stanley Cup wins and was an important part of that year with the Flames that they went to round two. But he was kind of a supporting cast member. And Nazem Kadri was an important but supporting cast member of Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, and Mikko Rantanen when winning a Stanley Cup in Colorado. And Mackenzie Weegar, you know, when he was in Florida, it was Weegar, but he was there, but yeah, there's Aaron Ekblad. And when he was here for his first couple of years, it was Hanifin and Tanev and Rasmus Anderson. And now Mackenzie Weegar's the best defenseman on this team, and there's no question about it. And he just keeps getting better every single year. And I think these guys are really embracing the challenge of, hey, this is my first opportunity being in this spot. Like, I'm going to lead this team to the playoffs. Whether it's successful or not, I don't know. But, like, you can't fault what you're seeing from these guys right now. And I think that needs to be given a little love as well.
Yeah, and the word I keep coming back to when you talk about those sort of things is empowerment. You know, Rasmus Anderson, to me, is the best example of it. And all those guys you mentioned are they've kind of benefited from it as well. But, it, you know, they pulled Rasmus Anderson aside after last year and basically said, look, you know, we know you've got a decision to make on your future in the organization. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to make a decision too. Who knows where this is going to go, but for this year, we need you to step up and play even more minutes. You're going to be as big a leader as you've ever been on this team, and we're counting on you. Like, guys want to hear that. And, you know, a lot of people thought that a guy like Kadri would want out when all those other guys were leaving last year. He didn't sign up for this and all this. And I questioned it too. I remember asking him about it, and I wasn't sure his answer really convinced me that he did want to stay. But his actions have made it pretty clear that he's taken on the increased responsibility as a challenge. He takes great pride in what he's been able to do. And I would be shocked, absolutely shocked, if anytime soon Nazem Kadri went into Craig Conroy's office and said, yeah, you know what? I just don't know if we're good enough. I really do want to chase another cup. I want out of here. I think he absolutely loves the additional responsibility. Mm-hmm. Same with Weegar, same with Anderson, and I think all of them have been thriving under it. Same with Coleman. You know, Backlund's had a down year, but I think he's been banged up, and, you know, he missed some time, and I think he probably could have left the lineup a lot earlier than he did. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if this team is mathematically eliminated soon. I wouldn't be surprised if they just shut him down for the run of the year, because I think he's playing hurt big time. And I can't put him in the same category, but, you know, last year we saw an empowered Michael Backlund as well when they made him the captain. I think he stood up a foot taller and took a whole lot of pride in knowing that as he went, this team would go. So, yeah, I think there's power in all that, and you got the right guys in place. Their character is all such that they want to be part of that. You don't want a guy who's going to shrink away from that and not want to be a part of it. If they're here, you want them to buy in, and those guys all have.
It is the Eric Francis Hour on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joining us here on Flames Talk. Every Friday, it's the Eric Francis Hour. We got lots to get to as we continue along this hour, because you mentioned Zane Parekh, and there's a lot of buzz about, you know, if, when, how we might see Zane Parekh make his NHL debut as early as this season. We'll dive in on that as we continue along. The Eric Francis Hour is coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Friday. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, Francis. It's the Eric Francis Hour on this Friday. Pat Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca this hour on Flames Talk. Everybody seems to want to know about Zane Parekh and, you know, what the rest of this season is going to look like for Calgary's number one prospect. Of course, Parekh taken ninth overall at the 2024 draft and is having just a historic season with Saginaw. Now, here's the situation. His Saginaw Spirit are down 3-1 to the Erie Otters in a best-of-seven series in round one of the OHL playoffs. Game five goes on Saturday, so conceivably Zane's season could be over come Saturday night. Now, Flames, here's kind of, and I've checked in on this a few times now, so here's kind of like the best way I can explain things, and I know that you and I are kind of on the same page with this, but I think, first of all, the Flames want Zane to go as far as he possibly can go in the OHL playoffs. So if they can come back and force a game six or game seven, Flames are all for that. If they're out in five and his season's done on Saturday, then I think one thing we know for sure, Zane's going to come to Calgary and he's going to join the Flames and he's going to have an opportunity to be around the team. And from that point, I think everything's on the table. I think the Flames will be treating everything with an open mind, but while the team is still fighting for their playoff lives and while games still mean something and they still have an opportunity to track a team down, then lineup decisions are going to be made by Ryan Huska. And the coach is going to, there's not going to be any pushing like, hey, let's maybe see if we can get some young players in the lineup. Like, this is going to be fully on the coach until they are essentially or officially eliminated. And that begs the question, you know, if they're playing games to keep their season alive, what's the comfort level of Ryan Huska putting a guy with zero NHL games into the lineup? And that's what I think it's going to come down to, Francis.
Yeah, and I don't think there'd be, you know, I to be fair, I guess you'd at least want to see him in practice for, you know, several days at the minimum. And these guys don't practice that much anymore. I just don't see... Well, I agree with you. Look, I don't see any scenario under why you would or want to play him if the games were still meaningful and they were mathematically still alive. There's just no way you do that. You don't take away a spot from a guy who's been in the war all year long for a kid who just shows up and did nothing to prove that he's NHL caliber while he was in training camp this year. And he'd be the first to admit that. I mean, he had a horrific camp. He was overwhelmed by the whole experience. He said it was humbling. And I think, you know, I think that's pretty obvious that he was a fish out of water. Now, he went out and had another successful year. I'm not saying he shouldn't play a game. If the Flames are mathematically eliminated, I shut down four or five of the main guys who are banged up right now. I say, you sit down, you watch for the rest of the year. Thanks for your service this year. Rory Cairns, come on up. Soloviev, you come on up. Kuznetsov, come on up. All on emergency basis because of the injuries. You know, as you and I discussed today, they can only have two regular call-ups, but that's really not much of an impediment. I think you get Zane Parekh in every game you could possibly get him into if he's here. You certainly get Suniev in there for as many games as you can. Mm-hmm. Then it's all just you're playing with house money and you just want to see whatever you can get from these guys and make them feel as comfortable as possible heading into next year. That's a no-brainer. But anybody who would suggest for a half second that Suniev or Parekh or any of these guys would get a look while the game still means something, it's ridiculous. So it's not going to happen. So I think it can be a good opportunity, but they're going to have to wait for their chance. That's for sure.
And I mean, I think if all of a sudden you bring Parekh in and he gets into a practice or two and the coaching staff gets so convinced, like, holy cow, you know what, maybe we have that'd be amazing. Sure. But I guess what I think is, like, I just, if it doesn't happen, if he doesn't play and the games are still meaningful and it has to wait until, and they don't want this to happen, like the Flames would like to have seven meaningful games left on their schedule, as they should. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't get into meaningful games and it has to wait until maybe there is an elimination scenario, like I don't think that you can be hypercritical of that. Like I want to see Zane as much as anybody else. And I was pushing the narrative in training camp that, hey, like, why not Zane? Why couldn't he make this team out of camp this year? Like, I really have high hopes for this young player. I absolutely do. But if he doesn't play Friday against Minnesota with their season on the line, I'm not going to sit here ripping into the head coach and the coaching staff and say that's an egregious mistake, because that's a hard situation. Like, you got to be super confident in what you've got. And a guy with zero NHL games, it's just hard to suggest that, you know, that would be the right time to put him in. And probably unfair to the player, too.
100%. I was going to add that exactly. Like, it's not just about the team. It's about the player. You want, if you're putting him in a game and these games don't, and they mean something and he fails, I think he'd feel even worse than he would, you know, under normal circumstances. So, no, it's
there again, we go back to the blueprint, pretty straightforward. Nothing is going to change the plan. Had they promised Sooney have a game? I don't believe they did. They say they didn't, but I also don't believe they did. But I also think understand that. I think everybody understands that there's a pretty good chance he's going to get in because the games at some point will be meaningless. So, you know, and hey, I'm as excited as anybody to see Sunia play, or even more so Parekh, of course. Everybody wants to see these guys. That's the whole focal point of this organization moving forward. Everybody wants to see the youngsters. That was what this whole season was supposed to be about, just the youngsters. And as we talked about earlier, everyone got a hell of a bonus and saw a team that almost made the playoffs or is on the, you know, just on the outside looking in right now. So, yeah, the youngsters will take the center stage soon enough. But you don't need to force that. That's pretty clear.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, Francis, I think the Flames will give Zane Parekh every opportunity to make the team next year. Like, I think that they will be willing to clear space for him. I think that they will come into training camp giving him, like silver plattering opportunities for him to prove that he can be on the team. Like, I really think because of who he is and how important he is to this organization going forward, because of the limitations of his age and being unable to play in the American League, like, if it doesn't happen this year or it doesn't happen in a meaningful game this year, that doesn't mean anything other than it didn't happen this year. And it's I'm very, very, like, at this point, I'd be pretty surprised if we didn't see Parekh play a good chunk of NHL games next year. It just it makes too much sense not to see it. And so, yeah, maybe it doesn't happen
in
April. Exactly. Like, there's really no other option.
There's no option for failure. I shouldn't say that. There's an option is he does stay here and play a good chunk of games in the NHL and he does fail, but that doesn't matter. That, I mean, you don't want that. Nobody wants that. But it is a possibility, because what are the options? You're not sending him back to junior. There's absolutely no reason to send him back to junior. He's a special case, and you have to treat him, I think, in a special way. And I think that means lumping it. Even if he has another bad camp this year, you're still going to give him his 9 games, and you're probably going to give him a whole lot more than that as the season goes on, because you can't do anything with him in the minors. And you're not sending him back to junior. So, you know, I'm, you know, he's got a long way to go to prove that he can skate with these guys. And I know he's so excited to atone for the terrible camp he had last year. Like, can you imagine? His whole life, he's never failed at anything. And can you imagine he comes here and it's just a colossal failure. And he leaves, you know, with his tail between his legs, vowing to be better for next year. And I have no reason to believe he won't show better next year or late this year if he gets a chance.
What do you say? Last one on Parekh, because I do want to talk about Suniev as well. Because I know you wrote about him on Friday and a lot of excitement about him getting signed as well. But what do you make of Cale Makar did it in 2019. Where are you on that side of the conversation when it comes to Zane?
What, like, if the Flames made the playoffs, would you play him?
Yeah, or if the Flames are in do or die games here and he's available, you know. With Makar, why couldn't the Flames do it with Parekh? That is a argument I've seen a couple of times.
I don't like the argument. The only way you could even convince me that that's a conversation starter is if, you know, Uyghur, who runs the power play, is injured or something like that, and you're like, look, putting Zane in to run our power play is a better option than putting, you know, having Jake Bean run the power play. Or, you know, I know Rasmus Anderson's kind of next on the list, and then it's Miramanov. And then after that, it's kind of like, oh, okay. Well, to me, you know, that's the only scenario under which I could see possibly doing it. I'd be so dead against it for any other way other than that, right? I mean, then you could really just literally play him for 9 minutes a night, mostly on the power play, and, you know, get his feet wet. And it's kind of solving a problem that a team has because they're down a major contributor to the lineup. At that point, you got nothing to lose. But if you're going to put him in the lineup to replace a productive member of the blue line, I'm dead against it. I'm dead against it. And, like, what, you know, you can start going through the list. Like, you wouldn't put him in to replace Braden Pahal. They play totally different games and they're asked to do different things. You know, it would have to be one of the big guns who comes out because of injury. That's the only kind of a scenario I see. Do you think they should play him? You know, if the games are meaningful, I mean, again, there's a caveat there that what if he comes and practices with the team and everyone's like, oh my God, it's unbelievable the skill this guy has. We have to play him. I just don't see that. I there's not enough time.
That's kind of where I'm at as well. Like, if it is clear that, like, oh man, we have got to get this guy in, and his game has come so far since September that we need to get him into the lineup ASAP, and he proves it in practice, well then, yeah, Francis, your mind can be changed. My mind can be changed. Like, but failing that, no, I don't think you need to force it. And I know that this roster to many on the outside isn't a world beating roster, but to your point, I mean, this is the group that has gotten them to where they are, and this is the group that is that they've built this identity. And yeah, I just don't know if there's like a natural place to do it unless you're starting to shut guys down or sit guys out. And you don't do that if you're still fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot. And here's the last thing I'd say about Makar. Like, Makar was about 20 and a half years old when he jumped in. You know, Zane is just over 19. He just turned 19 in February. So, yeah. Talking about like almost a year and a half difference in terms of their age. Like, to me, that's maybe a little bit more October to February. Like, there's a bit of a gap there in terms of, you know, just the overall experience. And Makar had been playing against 22 and 23-year-olds. I also think it's not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison.
100%. Think about who Makar was playing against, and that's the big thing, you know, men versus boys. Like, Perek's playing with boys, and Makar was playing with men. You know, 23, 24-year-old NCAA studs every night, hard hitting. You know, not every night. I know their schedule's a whole lot lighter, but I just think that he was a lot better prepared. There's a likelihood he's a lot better prepared because he played at that level.
Also, Cale Makar's the greatest defenseman we've seen in this league in, you know, 20 years. There's also that.
Yeah, there is also that. And, you know, hey, I'm not saying it's ridiculous. The comparisons to Makar and Quinn Hughes and Lane Hutson are all, you know, fill your boots because the kid's a special talent at this age and this level. But, you know, let's give a little more credit to the guys that we just mentioned. They're one in a million, those guys. So, you know, and Zane has proven to be one in a million at the junior level, but that's a whole lot different than the NHL level. I mean, yeah, he's going to be the biggest story all year long for the Calgary Flames next year. You know, Dustin Wolf's the biggest story this year, and, you know, everybody's really enjoyed watching his journey and, you know, and seeing his growth and seeing his success and all that. He's going to have to give way next year. Step aside, Dustin. It's now Zane Perec season for all the headlines, you know, all season long. Not to say Wolf's not going to continue to turn heads and be a star. I do think he's going to be a star for a lot of years. But Perec is the guy who, when we walk into camp next year, all eyes on Zane Perec above all.
Let's finish off the Eric Francis Hour this week, Francis, by talking about Idar Suniev, signed by the Flames on Wednesday to his entry-level deal, and just a lot of excitement. The Flames decided they would be cool with burning the first year of his entry-level deal to get him, to incentivize him to come play or to come join the team and come out of college in his sophomore year as opposed to going back for year number three. There's a lot of excitement about this player. They really wanted to make sure they got this done, not just because if you go back for a junior year, you're 1 year closer to becoming an unrestricted free agent, but also because they wanted to get their development team to have their hands on him, you know, right now and all the time, and to be able to get him around the team and the strength and conditioning guys and all that type of stuff. They think they've got a player here, and they wanted to make sure they got him signed. They did, and there's a lot of excitement around Suniev, isn't there?
There sure is. I think a big part of the reason, the rationale behind wanting him here so badly, you covered some of the big ones, but I also think his size is a big factor too, right? He's 215 pounds, 6'2". Like, you're not worried about him being in over his head. Sure, can he get stronger with the help of the development coaches? Absolutely. You know, he's got boy strength right now compared to the man strength that most guys in the NHL have. But I think that's a big part of the reason why they're so comfortable with throwing him in, you know, if and when the time comes here. When I think of Suniev, I always reflect back on the day he was drafted. And Craig Conroy was so excited about Suniev. Yep. That's not to say he wasn't excited about the other guys he got, but they didn't have a third-round pick. They went out and got one in the Tyler Toffoli trade. And that opened the door for them. You know, they didn't know it at the time, but that opened the door. He really, really wanted to get a third-rounder. He was excited about that. And he ended up turning into a guy who he really, really wanted. And I know that every GM who's ever drafted anyone always says, we couldn't believe he was still there. We can't believe how excited we got him. But it was not just lip service. I felt like he was so excited. Did you sense that too?
Oh, when absolutely. I remember being there in Nashville and Connie talking about him. Because they really were hoping he'd still be there when that jersey pick came up in the third round. Yeah, they were buzzing when they got him. And I remember, you know, his first year, his freshman year at UMass, every time he did something, Connie would be like, yeah, did you see what Suniev did? Like, there's a lot of excitement around this player.
Yeah. So I think about that all the time. And it's not like he just kind of evolved. Because a lot of people, let's be honest, the diehards, sure, they follow these kids, but the casual fan is just like, okay, wait a second, who's this kid? I don't remember hearing about this kid before, which is a fair thing for a lot of people to say, right? You just, the casual fan is just like, oh, I don't, I've never seen him play. I don't follow it. Tell me more about this kid. Well, the progression has been steady. And 2 years ago when he was drafted, you know, had pretty almost a goal a game through the regular season and the playoffs. I know it's the BC Hockey League, but, you know, they were pretty steady numbers, and he's kind of continued that on this year in his sophomore season at college against some of the best collegiate players in the world. And, you know, the numbers he put up this year are amongst some of the players that they're talking about for the Hobie Baker and some of the best players in college hockey. And he did it in his second year. You know, in a lot of ways, he's kind of being looked at and treated like a first rounder. Would you not agree? Like,
yeah,
the way he's progressed and continued to be as dominant as he was, scored some huge goals for his school along the way in the playoffs, an overtime winner and such. So, and what I also think is impressive too, it's not just a goal a game that he had. You look pretty much everywhere he goes, it's always an even distribution of goals and assists. And when you read scouting reports on this guy, it always talks about his playmaking ability. So it's not like he's just a one trick pony. Get it to him in Ovi's office and he'll finish it off with that deadly shot. He can also make plays for himself and score goals like that by everything I've read. I'm not going to sit here and lie and tell you I watched UMass games all year, but that's the talk when you talk to people about him. He's not just a finisher. He can be a playmaker too. So that's pretty exciting for people. The only knock on him, and it's not really even a legitimate knock, is that he's not a right shot player. He's a lefty. And in this organization, if he was a right shot guy, he would be a unicorn. Like the hype around him would be even greater because this organization is so bereft of right shot players. So, but you know, he's going to have to suffice as a lefty. I don't think you want to ask him to switch anytime soon.
Yeah. We'll talk about that next week. What players they should try to shift to right shots going forward.
Sure. There you go.
Speaking of which, we are in 2 weeks' time, Francis. Whether they make it or don't make it, we'll be wrapping up the regular season on the Eric Francis Hour. And in 1 week's time, we'll be getting ready for what, you know, Flames fans hope is a massive game, an 8 o'clock start next Friday against the Minnesota Wild. So lots still to sink your teeth into, and we'll have lots to talk about next week on the Eric Francis Hour. For now, pal, great stuff as always. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, my man. Have a great weekend. Well, we'll see you down at the rink tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll see you on Saturday morning. Bye, Francis.
Cheers, buddy.
He's Eric Francis. He's on Twitter, at Eric Francis. And that is the Eric Francis Hour here on Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers. And that'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program. This hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.